Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Come on, say. That's the nothing personal verb of the day for Friday. Thank God it's Friday, March 29th, 2024. That's French for to begin, as in opening day. Who had a good day yesterday? It was raining so much in the Northeast. Very disappointing that only 26 teams played yesterday. I love it when all 30 play. And we had to wait till 3 p.m. for the first game. A lot of things went on yesterday, and I want to go piece by piece to give a tiny bit of perspective before people lose their minds thinking one way or the other, which I'm 1,000% guilty of. Winning opening day is amazing. You lose your first game in extra innings and you feel despondent. Nah, you're fine, Miami. It's fine. But I got to start with the Dodgers. It wasn't really their opening day. They're calling it the home opener. Otani cheered, standing ovation. Remember, fans at the end of the day, they don't care too much about the outside distractions. The Dodgers want a ring. They're happy to have their shiny new toy play at home, looking at the top of their lineup in a full Chavez Ravine. And I'm looking at the Dodgers, and I'm watching Betts and then Otani and Freeman. And all I'm thinking is, I remember when I had a lineup that no one could get through straight every time through the lineup for a game. I remember a lineup where you're not going to go a donut in the top three spots of your lineup ever. Now, last year, the Dodgers lost to the Diamondbacks because Betts and Freeman went 1-for-21 in the divisional series. It's going to be very hard to have Betts, Freeman, and Otani go 1-for-32 in a divisional round series. The reason that you have Betts, Otani, Freeman in that order, when you're putting your lineup together, it used to be that you wanted your best hitter. Get your power hitter hitting cleanup. All right, now your best hitter hits third. Analytics got together and said, have your best hitter hit second. If you look at lineups and box scores around baseball, teams' best hitters hit second. I always had a disagreement with that. With no analytic background other than math, with no baseball background other than baseball cards, I love the math of my best hitter hitting first. And people say, but that makes no sense. You have the people on the top of the lineup get on base. Then you have the middle of the lineup drive them in. And my view is, I want the best people hitting as often as possible. And no one gets as many plate appearances as someone at the top of your lineup. Mookie Betts, the combination of power, speed, great leadoff hitter. Clearly, they view Otani as their best hitter. Did you see what he did? He hit a double in his first at bat. Everyone's cheering. And then he ran right into an out, Vladimir Guerrero style. People were looking to criticize. You got to look up. Look for your third base coach. Look to see whether Mookie's in front of you running. All I know is my takeaway from the Dodgers game. One, the Dodgers top of the lineup, good. Two, if Miles Mikolas is your opening day starter, you have a problem. And you know I love you, St. Louis. And you know I even chose the Cardinals to win the division. I'm not sure why. So I'm watching the first game, and it's the Orioles leading off the season. Corbin Burnes has the first pitch against the Angels. And I found myself, opening day is a strange day for me. I just did the math, Coca, and we've now passed the midpoint. I was in Marlins Park in 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. 6 years at Marlins Park as team president. Now it's been 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. This is the seventh year that I've been gone. No more blaming me. 7 years gone. I'm thinking about opening day and all the anxiety of it and all the excitement of it. You bring in an ace like Corbin Burns. Yes, the same Corbin Burns who was hurt with his arbitration in Milwaukee. Milwaukee trades him, takes the mound. Everyone's excited. There's a new owner in Baltimore who had taken over the day before. Corbin Burns gives up a home run to Mike Trout in the first inning. And I'm thinking Mike Trout is looking at this lineup and he's saying to himself, it's Groundhog Day. I'm going to have an MVP type season. I'm going to stay healthy. I'm going to make an absolute boatload of money and I'm going to win 70 games again. What is it about players? Some players, do you think it's bad? I was thinking about this yesterday, Coca. I think it's bad when a player doesn't care about winning. And Mike Trout is a good guy, actually. Pretty normal, which doesn't happen every day. He's got a no trade clause. Is it that the Angels wouldn't trade him or that he was too comfortable with his family in Los Angeles? And do I blame him for not wanting to leave his home and be with his family and stay in Anaheim? Or do I believe that a player should want to go somewhere and at least attempt to win during his prime? An unpopular family values opinion. You've got a limited number of years when you can win a ring. You can't be satisfied being rich, being a family man, and winning 70 games. Criticize me all you want. I think you could be a good father and win a World Series. It's not as though you are taking your child away for 10 years. Let's say your prime is another 4 years, 5 years. And it's only during the season, the majority of which is when the kids aren't in school to begin with. Yes, the kids have summer activities and camp and baseball and football and tennis, whatever. Do you think Trout goes home and just doesn't care? Is he Anthony Rendon? Did he look at the top of his lineup and say, Anthony, I'm just like you? No, Trout is not like that. Having Anthony Rendon at the top of that lineup made me sick. He shouldn't be an Angel. He should have been released. So the Orioles are playing the Angels, and the Orioles have the deepest lineup of every game I watched yesterday, which was many, because they were staggered enough and double devices. With these watch parties that we do, it's easy for me now to use all these double devices. I actually had three going. I had an iPad, a phone, and then the TV. So what I found is three might be too much because it turns out I was watching zero. I kept missing everything because a game that was like in the red zone where there's some action going on, put that on the big TV and then switch out the iPad, switch out the phone. And my phone didn't have a place to rest, so it kept falling down. I was thinking to myself, who's doing this other than me? So they brought, when you have a new owner opening day, I would always make myself available to go on the broadcast. We would tell our broadcast partner, hey, I'm going to come and do an inning. We're going to have our GM do an inning. We can mic up and you can do an in-game interview with the manager. We're trying to promote because more people are watching opening day than an ordinary day. More people are going to opening day than an ordinary day. So you want to put your best foot forward. For David Rubenstein, it was his first day as owner. So he goes in the booth and he starts talking about the Magna Carta. I kept thinking about being the president of a team when your owner's talking and saying, oh, come on, no one cares. As Pablo would say, these are rich man things you're talking about. It's great you've got the only private Magna Carta that you donated to the National Archives. It's great that you said that Mike Elias is the best GM and you're not going to be involved and you're going to just take his recommendation. It's great that you said, hey, I raised money easily. All I do is call people I know. David Rubenstein said that. He said that, how'd you raise the money with all these partners? He said, oh, I'm in financial services. I pick up the phone, dialing for dollars. And what I was thinking at that time is, huh, I wonder whether A-Rod did that. So the Orioles won their game convincingly. What else happened yesterday that interested me? The Yankee game, people are excited. Juan Soto threw out a runner at the plate. It's exciting. Yankees came back from 4-0. Did you watch the game? Framber Valdez, not good. When you walk six guys, you're likely going to lose the game. I'm happy the Yankees won just because the league is a better league when the Yankees and the Dodgers are winning games. And the Red Sox, frankly, they won too. What about Oakland? Can I spend 2 minutes on that? I don't want to move on without talking about Oakland just for a hot second here. 13,000 announced attendance. Announced means bought tickets, not turnstile. Every number you saw yesterday, announced. I wonder whether baseball looked at that and said, God, get to Vegas. Hurry up. Rob Manfred met the media before opening day yesterday and said, assuredly, the A's are moving to Vegas. Rumors, they're going to do a deal with Sacramento to play in the interim period. Not a rumor. That's exactly what they're going to end up doing. They are not going to stay at the Coliseum. There were usual fan protests and parking lot. Don't go in. We'll show John Fisher. We'll make him sell the team. No, not going to happen. I'm not sure that the deal in Vegas is happening either. I hate to say it. We're back where we started from. But when Rob Manfred, Bud Selig, used to look at attendance, and he would call you so angry. And of course, I was in Montreal in Florida. I was the subject of many a phone call from Bud Selig. What the hell are you doing there, David? Bud, we're selling as many tickets as we can. What do you want me to do? Do more. Do better. That's what he always say. He always had a pencil. He would literally be keeping track of attendance at each ballpark and then adding it up with his calculator, seeing where he was, comparing it to last year. That was the beginning of the commissioner's discretionary fund to buy tickets. That's how that all started. Little nugget there. The commissioner's office would give every team money to buy dollar tickets to give to people so paid attendance would look like it was going up, up, up. Go back in the 2010s when attendance was going up, up, up. That was the reason. I wasn't the only person making up attendance, I promise you. Believe me, Tampa does not make up attendance. It was always a subject of great consternation. 25,000 people for opening day. The thing is, in Tampa, that concerns me greatly is that Stu Stumberg, Stu 4869, we're live. Hi, my name's David Sampson. Okay, we're good. Let's keep going. 38 minutes to the weekend, baby. Stay with me. I do appreciate your time. Stu Sternberg does a press conference, Ted Leonsis style, announces a done deal in St. Petersburg, the excitement. He has the commissioner stump for him, saying, oh, there's a lot of changes in St. Petersburg. It is an amazing place. All this great development. It's totally different than what it used to be. They're staying in St. Petersburg. They're building this amazing facility. 25,000 for opening day for a team that always wins. What do you do if you're managing and not Kevin Cash style, like if you're the president of that team? What do you try differently? You rationalize. That's what I always did. Rationalize. In a new ballpark, it won't be like this. Oh, we're going to win in a new ballpark. We're going to sell out. We're going to draw the 32,000 a game, even on a random Wednesday in the middle of the dog days of summer. But opening day, 25,000, not good, not good. But the worst thing that happened on this opening day, for sure, is if you're a Cubs fan. Justin Steele was dialing. That was our pick of the day. We had the under in the Cubs. I can't remember who they were playing. Coke, I'm having a minute here. Can you assist me, please, in my right ear? Rangers, thank you very much. Wow. Nate Eovaldi was pitching against Justin Steele. We had the under 8.5. And Justin Steele, when you're watching opening day or any game, it really doesn't matter to me. I viewed game 40 the same way I viewed game 1, the same way I viewed game 120. Even if we're out of it by August. I'm still watching every game as a team executive, and I just don't want a player to get hurt. And one of the things that you look for, sometimes there's the running first to third, you pull up lame, hamstring, sorry. Sometimes you dive for a ball, Hanley Ramirez style, and your shoulder gets taken out of its joint. It happens. Sometimes a guy throws a pitch, grabs his forearm or his elbow, walks off the field. It happens. You don't know it. You see it, and then it happens. Or it happens, and then you see it. But there's other plays that just look wrong from the beginning. And I remember the feeling of watching a play develop the way the Justin Steele comebacker did for the Cubs when he awkwardly fielded it and tried to get the ball to first base for the out, and then he immediately grabbed his hamstring. Everyone can act as calm as they want, but Justin Steele is out with a hamstring injury. He's the Cubs' best pitcher. The Cubs do not have the type of depth that can withstand an opening day starter loss, although I could easily argue there's not one team. You know, you could say the Mariners have a great rotation. You can talk about, although Castillo lost yesterday, you could talk about a bunch of rotations, but when you lose any starter, that means you're headed down toward your 14th starter. Remember what we talked about, that every team needs 14 starters to get through a season. My hope always was that you only need 7. In an amazing world, you need 5, and that everyone stays healthy and productive. If you're down to 10 to 14, it's not just injury, it's also lack of productivity. So you're a bad team and an injured team when you go that deep. But opening day, losing your starter like that, it's so deflating. And of course, Craig Counsell has to put a positive spin on it. Everyone does. But you go back to that clubhouse and you just know. I would have run down to the training room when I have a player get injured. And I would have seen that replay on TV, go to the training room. The trainer would look at me. I'd look at the trainer. You pat the player on the buttocks and you just move right along because you know that this is not a short injury. Then you call your GM and you meet with your player development staff and you figure out who's next. Because in spring training, a little side note here, Coca, in spring training, you go through the exercise of who's the next man. You do your depth chart and you plan for lack of performance or injury. But when it actually happens during the season, you do the same meeting again. You don't just go to your briefcase, pull out your depth chart and say, oh, we had John Cocktoasten next, bring him up. Does not work that way. You go through the whole exercise, you look at your opponent, you look at when you need a fifth starter, and then you make a move. But look for the Cubs right now. They are going to have to put Justin Steele on the injured list. Hamstrings for pitchers are brutal. Because if you screw up your hamstring, it can screw up your shoulder and your elbow. So you got to wait for it to heal. So baseball executives and people in the commissioner's office are watching games just like you are. They're watching for different things. I always said that baseball eye is different than the audience eye. Much like in your profession, you view what you do differently than a normal person who doesn't have the expertise you do. One thing that baseball does is when they change the rules, they're studying the impact of that change. One of the things that's going to be enforced this year that you're going to see a lot of is that defenders cannot block a base that an offensive player is trying to get to. And it's manifesting itself in all these extra reviews. So runner from third trying to score, they're immediately going to the review. They put their hand on their ear. It's the equivalent of the challenge flag in basketball or in football or the timeout in basketball. Major league managers put their hand to their ear. They go to the review, and now it's really, the games are faster, but it's delaying everything because no one understands the rule of where the defender is supposed to be. And the reason why that matters is players spend a lot of time learning footwork. And the footwork tells you how you turn a double play. It tells you where you stand and what your feet are doing when you're receiving a throw for an attempted stolen base, when you're the shortstop or second baseman. The footwork is what catchers are taught, where to take a throw from right field versus left field, when the throw's up the line, when the throw's behind you. You are taught what to do. You practice it. And now players have to relearn. And it's quite troubling. So MLB takes a look at all of that. And they'll look at it over time. And they'll study it. And they'll decide if a rule's good or not good. And that's what they do with the pitch clock, studying who's in violation, who's not, etc. So the frustrating thing about it is this interim period is clumsy. And the reason it's clumsy is the players are still learning. So hang in there. It's all going to be okay. What's not okay with me is my frustration over the replay system in general, where my vote always was on the competition committee. I wanted replay whenever possible for every play, as long as it was 30 seconds maximum. My North Star was always tennis. Either the ball's on the line or it's not. And we find out very quickly. That Rangers-Cubs game had a play that blew my mind. It is not reviewable if an umpire does not call a foul tip because he doesn't see it, or more importantly, they're taught to hear it. Then it's not a foul tip, and that's it. It's either a pass ball or a wild pitch. Go look at the replay of the Ranger-Cubs game when the Cubs scored to take the lead on what was called a wild pitch by Leclerc, but really was a pass ball by Heim, who let the ball just sit there while he argued it was a foul ball, and the Cubs scored a run. It was like Little League because no one was going after the ball and the runners kept going. On replay, it was a clear foul ball, which means dead ball. Explain to me why we don't have that as review. When we were sitting in the competition committee, John Schuerholz, the father of replay, always used to say, we want the human element in the game. We don't want the review. It wasn't intended to see if the runner's foot comes off the bag by a quarter of an inch while stealing second. And I would always say, why not? Tell me why we wouldn't try to get every play correct and every play correct quickly. Silence. Crickets. I will again raise my hand and ask, if you've got the technology, get the call right. I don't care about the umpires union. I don't care about not wanting to show up an umpire, them not wanting to be wrong. Get the call right. That was a foul ball. Did you read what happened to A-Rod yesterday? Hi, my name, let me do that better for you. I'm going to do my A-Rod. I have to sit up very straight. I have to look proper, put on some makeup. Hi, my name is Alex, and I own the Minnesota Timberwolves. One second. Okay. Hi, my name is Mark. My partner Alex and I own the Minnesota Timberwolves. All right, let me see. I'm going to get it right this time. Hi, it's Alex and Mike. Mark, Mike, Alex. I thought we were going to own the team. And then all of a sudden, the team's not for sale. But we had the money. But everyone thought we didn't have the money. Everyone always thinks I don't have the money. But of course I have the money. Just like I didn't do any PEDs. Did you see the news? Glenn Taylor took the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Minnesota Lynx off the market, quote unquote. Let me explain. In the transaction that we discussed yesterday, when Alex Rodriguez was getting 20% of the team to start, that was called a step transaction, an installment transaction. The final installment is always the most important because the final installment is when you get to be the general partner. Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez had until March 27th or March 31st, whatever date you want to choose, it doesn't matter, to give the final $600 million over to Glenn Taylor to get the final 40% to bring their total ownership share to 80% and become the majority owners and control people of the Minnesota Timberwolves. One of the issues is that they've had a hard time meeting the deadlines previously. but they've always either gotten an extension or found a way to fund whatever installment they were doing. Glenn Taylor was getting increasingly frustrated because he had sold in 21 at a number of $1.5 billion, knowing that the team was now worth $2.5 billion. So we explained to you why Glenn Taylor may be a little upset. We explained to you why we thought Alex could get money. He couldn't borrow money. They're at their limit, but could get money. But you have to offer the team at the lower valuation that you have it at, and let those new partners get that increase the way you have. What we did not see coming, wink, wink, what we had no idea would ever happen, wink, wink, is that Glenn Taylor would release a statement. Under terms of the purchase agreement, the closing was required to occur within 90 days following the exercise notice issued by Lori and Rodriguez, blah, blah, blah. That 90-day period expired on March 27th, 2024. Under certain circumstances, the buyer could have been entitled to a limited extension. However, those circumstances did not occur. The Timberwolves and Lynx are no longer for sale. Mic drop. A-Rod and Mark got the tweet, and they said, uh-oh. We need a statement right now. What do? Let's call A-Rod's crisis people. They've always been good with PR. So here's what they came up with. We are disappointed with Glenn Taylor's public statement today. We have fulfilled our obligations, have all necessary funding, and are fully committed to closing our purchase of the team as soon as the NBA completes its approval process. Horse hockey. Glenn Taylor's statement is an unfortunate case of seller's remorse that is short-sighted and disruptive to the team and the fans during a historic winning season. Let me stop you right there, PR people. Don't point out the fact that you're actually competitive and say that's historic. Just leave out the historic. And also, I'm not sure the fans give a tinker's damn. Very disruptive to the fans. When they go to the games and watch the team, they're like, wait, is it Glenn? Is it Alex? Who owns the team? I feel so disruptive, I'm not going to buy beer. It's such a silly thing to say in a statement, isn't it? But here's what's even sillier. If the transaction had closed as contemplated, Glenn Taylor would have been Alex's partner. Now, he's upset, frustrated, angry, scorned. Sound familiar? So he's lashing out. Sound familiar? Remember the time when he sued the commissioner? I wonder whether there are lawyers on retainer who are ready to sue for specific performance. That means, I don't want your money, Glenn. I want your team, especially at 1.5. And then Glenn is going to say to Alex, I have an idea. How about if you pay 2.4? We'll compromise. I find the whole thing to be quite objectionable, but there are going to be lawyers, lots of lawyers, because Alex and Mark say, hey, we were ready to roll. Glenn says you weren't ready to roll. I once was involved in a lawsuit. Can I go off the subject here, Coco? We're going audible time with the two following words, basically finished. I had like a 2-month arbitration over those two words. What does that exactly mean? I always said basically finished. That's basically finished. Hey, I'm basically finished. That means maybe I'm finished. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'll tell you. Maybe I won't. Maybe there's more to do. Maybe there's not. Maybe I've accomplished all my goals. Maybe I haven't. What's going to happen next once they all lawyer up? They're going to have to go to the agreement. Adam Silver's going to have to get involved. And guess how it's going to end? Glenn Taylor gave a little quote to The Athletic that gave you the roadmap to the ending. We're just saying we had a contract with you guys. You've had your time, and this is the end of the contract. And we're just going to go on running the way we've been run. Okay. This is going to end with A-Rod making an increased offer above the 1.5. and Glenn Taylor saying, you know what? I didn't quite like your public statement. You can keep your 40%. That's what they own. They're still limited partners. But I'm going to sell the control piece to somebody else. I wonder exactly who they would sell it to. Mark Cuban, maybe. He's in the market to buy a team. What did he just sell his team for, Coca, to the Edelsons? Was it like $3.5 billion? Glenn Taylor's team is not worth what the Mavericks got. It's worth more than what the Orioles got. I'm going to say that this is a transaction that will happen at the valuation of 2.5. You know what? I'm going to do a full wait to see here. How about that? Wait to see is when we tell you something's going to happen. If it does, great. If it doesn't, fine. We'll revisit it. The Minnesota Timberwolves will be sold by Glenn Taylor for an enterprise valuation of greater than $1.5 billion. Wait to see. When we come back, we're going to review a movie. I watch a movie every day, and then we're going to get into something that did happen before Tampa played that I need to give you an update on one of their players. Do me a favor. Stick around. 20 minutes to go till the weekend.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Nothing Personal. It's David Sampson. We are here every Monday to Friday, just about 8 a.m. live on the Nothing Personal with David Sampson YouTube channel. Find us there and subscribe. We've been on DraftKings Network all week long. You can find that various places, Samsung Plus, Roku, all sorts of great distribution. And of course, you may be listening and therefore not catching my dandy threads. DavidSampsonPodcast.com. That's where you can get merch. That's where you can see former shows, old shows, new shows, side shows, under shows. Speaking of shows, how about live shows? We are merely 4 sleeps away from going to Philadelphia on April 2nd. Come join us for all you Philly fans out there. April 2nd in Philly, then April 8th in Atlanta. Just click DavidSampsonPodcast.com or on Twitter, David P. Sampson. I've got links. Come have fun with us. Be merry at City Wineries at a city near you. And for all the people, Coca, we've heard from people around the country, including Canada. We had someone ask whether we were doing Europe too. I appreciate that. We're going to start here, but we do want to make it to Chicago, to St. Louis, to Texas, Austin, we heard, Houston. We had a bunch of Charlotte. We've got audience everywhere. Thank you. I'm humbled by it. If you have the time, I promise you, you will enjoy the live shows. Way more than I enjoyed The Beekeeper. I love Jeremy Irons. I love Felicia Rashad. I love Josh Hutcherson. I mean, who doesn't? Jason Statham? The Beekeeper is about a beekeeper, literally. He keeps bees, like the thing that makes honey. Except it's a double entendre. He's also this super fighting, spy-like guy. I never understood. You're supposed to suspend disbelief. Fine. When you're beating up 10 guys and they're all armed, why do they only fight you one at a time? I just find it very strange. So he fights them one at a time, but none of them ever shoot him. But yet, they all have guns. Strange. So I watched The Beekeeper. Let me save you a quick sec here. Pass. Nothing personal pick of the day. We had the under 8.5 Rangers Cubs baseball. We're back, and we won. Were you nervous when it was 3-3, two men on? Walk-off homer would have put it over. For all the people who faded Sampson, that was what you were hoping. I don't blame you. I'd been so COLD. But now we're Buster Poindexter, David Johansson. Hot, hot, hot. I can't say that after one win. What do we got tonight? Get ready, Yankee fans. We're taking Christian Javier against Carlos Rodon. The Astros are only minus 135. We're taking the Astros on the money line. I'm not exactly sure why it's such a small line. I guess maybe because people think Rodon is a number two starter, which he's not, and that Javier's a number two starter because it's the second game of the season, which he's not. This is really more like a 3-5. Astros, unlikely to lose two in a row. That's why we're taking them. Saturday, we're back to doing this. We did this last season, and I really liked it. I want to keep doing it. I lost a wait to see on Patrick Corbin, and I revisited it. I thought Patrick Corbin would be released by the Nationals last year. I cannot believe he's still pitching for them. You cannot be a rebuilding team and give Patrick Corbin the ball every 5 days. It's completely absurd. But Patrick Corbin's getting the ball for the Nats against Hunter Green and the Reds. We're taking the Reds on Saturday. Go against Patrick Corbin. There's no way he starts 30 games this year, Coca. The Nationals just can't do it. All right, we're adding that. Can we please? A double wait to see today? I forgot what the first one was today. People don't believe me. I don't have a script. I know we did a wait to see. I have no idea what it was about, but we're going to do another. Oh, the Timberwolves. Thank you. The And 4-8-69. We had one wait to see of the Minnesota Timberwolves selling for more than $1.5 billion again. Our second wait to see is on Patrick Corbin. If you can find anywhere a way to wager that his game started will not start with a three, find it. Do it responsibly. It's risky, of course. Patrick Corbin is going to get released by the Nationals this year. I'm re-upping the wait to see. Okay. MLB buried some news yesterday. I just want to bring it quickly to the forefront. I don't like promulgating negativity around opening day because it's such a joyous time. Everybody's celebrating. So they did a quick little newsy item that Wander Franco, the Tampa Bay Rays shortstop, is being put back on administrative leave. That same list that Trevor Bauer was on forever. The thing about administrative leave is that you still get paid. So Wander Franco will keep getting paid by the Rays, but he just won't play for the Rays. While the investigation into his inappropriate sexual behavior, inappropriate relationship with minors, all the things that are being investigated in the Dominican and with the Department of Investigations, that same department that's investigating Ohtani, that same department that's always busy, as I told you, they put Wander Franco on the list through June 1st, but they made sure to tell you he may not be on it through June 1st if there's a disposition in the case or our investigation concludes. News alert, it won't conclude before June 1st. It's way better just to get Wander Franco out of your head. If you are a Tampa fan, just know that you're not going to see Wander Franco again. He last played August 12th of last season, and I would highly doubt that he will wear a Rays uniform again. But they put him on the administrative leave list. Shh. Sometimes you do quiet things. Sometimes you do things loudly with statements and press conferences. Now players, we used to invite players into the press conference room, ask them if that would be okay, if they would talk, see if they would meet the media. Wander Franco, of course, is not meeting anybody. He's trying to figure out, can he keep his $182 million? Quite a contract Tampa gave out. Meanwhile, he won't be able to. But that said, players would be, they'd meet the media after games. They'd talk about the game. We have a harder time now getting players to do that because they all have their own platform. And it's way better if you've got something to say, don't give it to a beat writer. Give it to your audience on your podcast. Draymond Green has a podcast. It's called the Draymond Green Show. So if he's got something to say about his actions, what better place to do it? Might as well get some clicks, some downloads, some sponsors, a little cash, maybe make up for the suspensions. You see, Draymond Green was ejected from another game the other day. I think it was 2 days ago. And there was a lot of talk about Steph Curry shaking his head. And some people thought his eyes may have been tearing. Some people were saying Draymond Green is not fixed after that amazing amount of time that he spent away the last time he was suspended, where Adam Silver made him check in and announced him as fully healthy, sort of like he did with Ja Morant. I guess for Draymond, it took, I don't know, what was it, 16 games? That was his indefinite suspension. Remember that in January? We've met with Draymond and we're good now. I don't think anyone would say that Draymond is okay. And Draymond himself, commenting on his ejection, said it just can't happen. I said what I said. I deserve to be kicked out at that point. So listen, a little piece of advice here for players and for management, for team presidents, for anybody. When you're doing something and you already know what the consequence is, you have to make sure you've done the cost-benefit analysis and that you have decided that in your formula, your action is purposeful. Just like when we'll ask a manager, get kicked out of the game today. We'll ask a pitcher, throw at that guy. We do it not because it's a Tuesday, because we believe there's a momentum issue, there's a payback issue, there's an energy issue, there's something that needs to happen. We need a little cattle prod right in the tuchus. It's planned. It's calculated. It's not random or out of control. When Draymond Green is admitting to you that what he did, it just can't happen, that means he wasn't trying for it to happen, which means that it happened and he's sort of out of control. That ought to concern the front office of the Warriors. It ought to make Steve Kerr say, uh-oh. It ought to make Adam Silver look in the mirror and say 16 may just not be enough. So what do you do if that's your situation? What is Adam Silver when he hears the Draymond Green show? They have to do something that they don't want to do. They have to acknowledge that their plan doesn't work. Their rehab plan with players, whether it's for violence, whether it's for guns, whether it's for sex, whether it's for anger management, their whole plan of the quick fix to miss as few games as possible so as not to hurt the product or give an unreasonable competitive edge to opponents in a playoff race, they have to acknowledge it doesn't work. You don't get cured in 5 therapy sessions. How would therapists ever live in nice houses if that were the case? I think Draymond Green is in his 14th minute of fame, and he has had, by all respects, a Hall of Fame level career. Query, is he a Hall of Fame player? It's interesting. I'm going to have to say Draymond Green will be in Springfield one of these years. But I'd have to say that his level of impact is de minimis right now. The juice, Draymond, is no longer worth the squeeze. And Adam knows, and Steve knows, and Joe knows. So what do? You wait for the season to play out. You speak to your TV partner and say, are you going to give Draymond a soft pillow landing so he can stay in the public consciousness because he's popular, the same way the NFL is going to make sure that Jason Kelce has a spot on Monday Night Countdown or on some pre- or post-game show? You are not going to lose half of the Kelce attention that you're getting. Draymond Green brings eyeballs, fascination, wonderment. It's time for him to get behind the mic. And I don't mean just for his podcast. Okay. I want to talk about something that happened yesterday, briefly, in the remaining few minutes I have. You may have read about a sentencing that took place yesterday. Sam Bankman-Fried got sentenced to 25 years in prison. Do you remember him? The cryptocurrency guy? The one who took all your money and took it for himself and funded all sorts of things that ended up being for him? Maybe his ex-girlfriend? Remember when NFTs were the craze? They were just going up in value. Cryptocurrency. There weren't enough cryptocurrency either exchanges or things that people could put their hard-earned money into. How badly do you feel when there are people who take advantage in this way and commit this type of fraud? The level of fraud that Sam Bankman-Fried committed, almost unprecedented. I mean, there have been some bad people in the finance industry led by Bernie Madoff. Plenty of people back in the housing crisis back in the 2008 timeframe. But here's the thing about what Sam Bankman did that really bothered me. It's that he thought that he would use your money to make him cool. Reminded me a little of Scott Rothstein in Florida, that Ponzi scheme piece of crap who decided to steal money from charities and buy his way into athletic sponsorships and hobnobbing with the people who know. That's what Sam Bankman was doing. Getting Tom Brady and various other celebrities to be sponsors of his exchange, to hang out with them, to sit courtside at games. And he was using your money. And you thought that it was all going to work out. You thought you could be him. The irony of people like that is they are you. They just don't want to be. They spend all your money trying to not be you, to live a life that they could never otherwise live and a life that you dream of living that you'll never live. That's the worst type of fraudster, isn't it? The people who get behind a microphone and talk about all the things they're going to do to make your life better. And then, of course, your life doesn't get better. But the dream of their life, of the rich and famous, oh, I am one NFT purchase away. I'm one vote away in this election, and I'm going to have that life. Everything's going to be better. And it turns out he was just stealing. Standard, run-of-the-mill, fraudulent stealing. He's got 25 years now. Do you know what Bankman-Fried said during the sentencing? A lot of people feel really let down, and they were very let down. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about what happened at every stage. And then he said something that makes me crazy. He said his decisions haunt him every day. Interesting. I wonder if that's true. I wonder if he sits around. Is he saying that the decisions haunt him, or is it that he got caught? And that's what haunts him. Because I'm always trying. Oh, that's funny, Coco. You and I are in sync, Justin. Or is that Backstreet Boys? Who's Justin Timberlake with? Remember the boy band he was with? In sync. Yes. He was saying in my ear the same thing that we like to tell you on Nothing Personal. The same thing with the cheating scandals, the sex scandals, the financial scandals. Everybody, the drug scandals. Everybody's super sorry once they get caught. And then they're addicts. So Sam Bankman actually stood up there and said, I'm haunted. I think what actually haunts him is that it turns out he's still the same loser he always was. Whether he was rich, whether he was poor, whether he was free, or whether he was jailed. You can never get away from the man in the mirror. You can try myriad ways. You can do steroids. You can go work out. You can do anything to assume a different personality, but you got to deal with your own issues. What is it that makes someone think that they can take your money and use it for themselves? Is it ego? Is it desperation? I came up with this. I think I know what it is. I think it's just flat out delusion. When you are doing what Sam Bankman-Fried did, it doesn't even occur to you, forget that you won't get caught. It doesn't even occur to you that you're doing anything wrong. You're so delusional that you take other people's money, you spend enough time with Tom Brady, and you think you're them. And it reminds me of a story I was told early on in my baseball career. You can hang out with players all you want. You can hang out with movie stars all you want. You will not be a player. You will not be a movie star. It's phenomenal advice, actually. And it started the trend toward my tagline. It's just business. Enjoy your weekend. Let's be careful out there. We'll be back Monday. This is Nothing Personal.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.